All right. It is Thursday afternoon, March 18th, and there was just a few of us in lab, and I sort of started off and didn't hit the record button. And what we were doing was looking at spin-spin coupling, and we've decided to pick on one that was a little bit more complicated that had three different spin states. We had HA, HB, and HC. And HB and HC, these guys are a J3, three bonds apart. HA and HB, they are a J3, three bonds apart. But if I look at HC to HA, that's four bonds, and that's a J4. J4s are really tiny as compared to J3, so we're only going to focus on the J3s. And what we were doing was working on the tree diagrams. And so we decided to work from left to right. We worked on the tree diagram HC to HB. HC to HB is just, there's only one HB proton that splits this into a doublet at 10 hertz. We described this out at 10 hertz. And then we were working on HB, which was much more complicated. And working on HB, HB winds up getting split by HC. So there's a 10 hertz coupling constant between the two. And then HB also gets split by the three HAs at 6 hertz. So what we had done is the first HA, the second HA, and then finally the third HA, each one of these splitting out at 6 hertz. And we came to a very complicated pattern, 1 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 1. And in trying to pick out what that pattern is, I've repeated that pattern just as a line spectrum with its heights, giving the 1 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 1. I highlighted out the blue pattern, which is a quartet. As expected, we would expect that three neighbors would split HB into a quartet. So there is one quartet. And then HC splits the quartet of HB into a double quartet. And that's where the second red pattern comes in, is that the blue pattern and the red pattern have been split from each other. And we're getting a double quartet. And we were just outlining where the 10 hertz coupling constant is from the first line, the first blue line to the first red, and where the 6 hertz coupling constant is, which is within the quartet, which is the first blue line to the second blue line. And so what we see is we see the 10 hertz coupling constant is the doublet, and that's why there's one blue and one red set. And then the 6 hertz is the quartet, which is why there are four lines that are blue and four lines that are red. And so this is a doublet of quartet, is the explanation that is going on here. So Pokey reminded me that I did not record this. Now we're back on track, and I've walked back through it, got everybody up, and hopefully, maybe even in that recap, maybe I've made some more sense out of what it is that we just did here. How are we doing? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe you think you did, but you may not have. All right, let's also, while we're here, take a look at HA and the coupling of HA and the splitting with HB, which the splitting with HB is a 6 hertz coupling. So I will go three lines to the left and three lines to the right, and I will drop down my two lines. And this is JAB. This is 6 hertz. And that's my doublet. So what do I expect here? I expect a doublet for HA. I expect a doublet for HC. I expect a double quartet for HB. And so here is my doublet and my doublet and my double quartet, which is much more complicated. All right. And we can demonstrate this again. I was giving you the 10 hertz and the 6 hertz. I think I could stop the share and share the other app. Except my Java app disappeared, so I'm just going to share the screen. And hang on a second. Where did that thing go? Applications. GJ Visualizer. There it is. Share screen. GJ Visualizer. Okay, so what I can do in here is say that I've got 2, 4, 6, maybe that's my 6 hertz. This is my 6 hertz doublet. And then I'm gonna do a quartet. Oh no, the doublet was a 10 hertz. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. We'll call that 10. And then here we'll do a quartet at 6, 2, 4, 6. And there's my pattern of 1 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 1. And that's my double quartet. And so you can see once they move, as I put movement to them, sometimes it's a little bit easier to see the quartet as I put movement to it. And I've got the little quartets, and as they overlap and I get out to 6 hertz, they overlap in a way that only the tree diagram can really predict. And that's why the tree diagrams are really helpful, to be able to predict out sort of how that signal is expected to look. And I can increase their intensities so you can see that pattern a little bit better. 1 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 3 to 1 to 3 to 1. Okay. So the tree diagrams are just an easier way, or maybe not an easier way, but a way to track out complicated splitting patterns and what we expect in those complicated splitting patterns. And sometimes they can get pretty complicated. Let's maybe do one more. Let's do something that is maybe just a little bit simpler, and I'll have you guys do it. I don't want a quartet, but what I want is 2 protons. And then these 2, I'll do an oxygen. We'll put an R group here and we'll cut it at that, so that this is JA, JB, and each of these are JC. And I will tell you that this guy here is 2 hertz. And that the coupling between these guys is 4 hertz. Let's go 6. And that there is no coupling between HA and HC. So what I want is I want a tree diagram for HA, a tree diagram for HB, and a tree diagram for HC. See if you can build out those tree diagrams and see what patterns we get. Okay, so H A and H B are pretty simple. Well, H A is pretty simple. H C is pretty simple. H B is the more complicated one. H A is only split by H B, and it's only split at a 2 hertz coupling constant. So there's my 2 hertz. And this is split by HB. And HC is split by HB, and it's split out at 6, so I need to go 3 and 3. And there's my 6 hertz. And this is split by HB. But now HB winds up getting split by both of these. And so as I draw out HB, it's a little bit more complicated. I like to do the bigger coupling constant before I do the smaller, because there's less overlap and it's a little bit easier to draw. So what I'm going to choose to do is I'm going to choose to do the 6 hertz ones first. So I'm going to go out 3 and 3 to get my 6 hertz. I'll drop my lines. That's my first HC. And then I do that again. And I go in 3 and out 3. In 3 and out 3. And I drop my lines. Now, when I drop the line here in the center, the two intensities add. And so I use two lines rather than one line, because I want the number of lines equals the intensity of the signal. So when the two lines cross over and add together and fall in the same spot, that's intensity 2. So I've done my two HCs, and you can see how I track each proton that I'm doing. So I know which proton I'm doing, how they're connecting. And in fact, we could even use a bit of color in that these splittings are coming about because of the HC proton. And now we're about to go and do the HA proton at 2 hertz. So now each of these lines gets split into 2 hertz. So I'm simply going to go out 1 and in 1 and drop down my lines at 2 hertz. Now, where the intensity was 2, I keep the intensity 2 as I split it up. And this is HA causing this splitting. And what I end up with is a pattern, which is 1 to 1 to 2 to 2. To 1 to 1. And I can even predict the distance between them, because I was at 6 hertz and 6 hertz. So I know the distance between those lines. And now I'm 2 hertz between these guys. And so if I say it was 6 hertz between here, and I came over 2 and over 2, that's 4. Actually, I didn't come over. I came over 1 and over 1, because that's half of that. So that's 2. So that's 4 hertz in between these two lines here. And that allows me to predict the full pattern of what I would expect to see. This is a doublet, And this one is a double triplet. And so that pattern, if I were to map that pattern out, and I say that is one and one and two and two and one, the pattern would look like this. And there's my double triplet that winds up getting split out. Is that giving you a better idea of how to do the tree diagrams or how the tree diagrams are used? Might take a little time to sit with it, a little time to practice it.
I think just, I personally just keep getting tripped up where they overlap. Because I keep trying to align it with the number triangle you gave us, but it doesn't really.
The number triangle is different. Okay. So the number triangle, that's a good point. The number triangle is different. Okay, so the number triangle, Pascal's triangle, is a different thing altogether. Pascal's triangle predicts the intensities for overlaps where all the J values are the same, not where I have different J values. So Pascal's triangle the way that works is that it predicts the normal sort of intensity, line intensities that I would expect in a regular, easy repeating pattern. And so this would be for a doublet, a triplet, a quartet, pentet, sextet, we can go up to septet and higher. So there's more intensity patterns that we could see, but these are where all J values are equal in the tree diagram. Okay, so how do I get all the J values equal? Well, that means that all of the protons that are neighbors are in the same chemical environment. So let's say that I'm looking at a proton that is this guy, and it's got these CH3s on the outside. The CH3s are all chemically equivalent. So when I look at how many neighbors this proton has, it has 3, 6, 9. N plus one rule says that this thing should be split into 10 peaks. It's a, I don't know what 10 peaks is. Declet? I mean, we get triplet, quartet, pentet, sextet, septet, octet, nonet, decet? I don't know. And so these guys are all in the same chemical environment. Each of these would be a doublet because that single proton would split them all into a doublet. But this guy would be 10 signals. And we would have to keep going out in this tree diagram or the Pascal's triangle until we got out to 10 to figure out what pattern we would expect for that. But that's because they're all chemically equivalent that we would expect that pattern. But most of the time, our molecules aren't that symmetrical. Our molecules are not symmetrical. And because they're not symmetrical, the J values are not the same all the time. And so we wind up getting more complicated patterns, double triplets, double quartets, double doublets, triple quartets. We wind up getting more complicated splitting patterns oftentimes because of the branching of the molecules and the inequality of the J values. So maybe that helps to see a little bit kind of what can happen. All right, so it's different. So maybe it's different than it's the tree diagrams that I'm doing and the J values that I'm giving you don't align perfectly with Pascal's triangle, because Pascal's triangle is for more simplistic splitting patterns that we see. All right, let's do a couple of problems. Let's go back to the problems, back to the homepage, compound two. Compound two is C8H8O2. Let's go ahead and figure out the units of unsaturation on the C8H8O2 before we do anything else. So keys to problem solving. We're gonna do number two on Webb spectrum. First key, units of unsaturation. The reason that units of unsaturation is the first key is because it sets the possibilities. If you have a saturated molecule, you know that you're dealing with all sigma bonds. If you have one unit of unsaturation, you have either a ring or a double bond. Two units, you have two double bonds, two rings, a double bond and a ring, or a triple bond. It lets you know what your possibilities are so that you start to eliminate other possibilities. If you have one unit of unsaturation and you're proposing a saturated molecule, something is wrong. You're not doing something right. So units of unsaturation, CN, H2N plus two, plus one for every nitrogen, minus one for every halogen. This is the formula for saturation. It's how to figure out the number of hydrogens you should have if it were a saturated molecule. Our formula that we're dealing with is C8H8O2. So it's C8H8O2. What we're dealing with is we've got 2 times the number of carbons, 8, plus 2, and we have no nitrogens or halogens in the molecule, just oxygens, and oxygens do not affect the units of unsaturation. So the number of hydrogens that we would get for saturated is 2 times 8, 16 plus 2 is 18. 18 hydrogens if saturated. Now what we do is we take and we subtract the number that we have. When we subtract that, we find out that there are 10 hydrogens missing. And because a unit of unsaturation is 2, missing hydrogens, we divide this by 2. And that gives us our 5 units of unsaturation. Or 5 is the index of, what is it? Index of unsaturation, the index of some fancy fangled name for it that I never use. I just call it units of unsaturation to make it easier. So we got 5 units. There are 8 carbons. 5 units, the only way to get 5 units is to have something like an aromatic ring system. An aromatic ring system on its own is 4 units. So when you have this small a molecule that has 5 units of unsaturation, and then there's only 8 carbons, The only way to really do that reasonably is with an aromatic ring system. And then we have one more unit. So looking at that, there's two oxygens. We either have a carbonyl or a double bond or an additional ring, which would be hard to do with eight carbons. But this sets my expectations. Now I know what I need to look for, or at least I have some ideas of what I'm going to be looking for in my proton NMR. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to make a table, data table. And the data table that we make for both the proton and the carbon is very similar. We want to list the parts per million. We want to list the integration values, the splitting, number of neighbors, and then an assignment is very helpful. What we think this thing is. Now we go and we get the spectrum and start analyzing it. So let's get the proton spectrum. Okay, in the proton spectrum, if I click on the first peak, we see that that first peak is a singlet and that it's showing up at about 3.85. So I'm going to go and write that down at 3.85. Integration, I don't know yet. Splitting, singlet. Number of neighbors, zero. Assignment, I don't know what it is yet. And we'll have to get the integrations. And maybe we should do that now. Maybe I should go back and zoom out and figure out what these integrations are. Okay. This website does not give you integrations. This website gives you the integration bars. The integration bars are used by looking at the height of the bars and dividing by the smallest bar to figure out the relative ratios. And then the relative ratios oftentimes are the absolute ratios, although sometimes you may need to multiply them by a multiplier to figure it out. So let me take this shot right here. We'll screenshot it. We'll bring it in. And then from here, we'll try to work it out in Notability where we have some drawing capability to be able to figure out those integration values. All right, so here what we can do is I can take the shortest one of these and compare it. I can now copy it and see that that matches that guy. It matches that guy. And this one, it looks like it's about half, if I'm reading that right. Let's copy that and paste a second one. Can't. There we go. Ah, it is pretty much two of those. But then what is it over here? Looks like it's about three of those. So if I take another one and I add it onto it, yeah, that looks like three, right? So this is 1 to 1 to 1 to 2 to 3. So now I have my integration values. And now I can go back and I can say, all right, this is integrating for three protons. And as an assignment, when something integrates for three protons in the same chemical environment, one of the main ways of getting three protons in the same chemical environment is to have a methyl group. And if we look at the NMR table, and I bring that NMR table back into it, so let's grab that NMR table again. So all the way down here, our signal was at 3.85? Yeah. So 3.85, here's 3.85 is in this region. That puts me in a phenol type of hydrogen. Well, it's unlikely that I will have three hydrogens that are that guy, the phenol. It's not likely that I'll have three of those. It's not likely that I'll have three OHs. That's unlikely as well. But this one says a hydrogen, which is on a carbon that is connected to an oxygen. The oxygen acts as an electron withdrawing group, pulling these carbons, deshielding them, and pulling them downfield all the way down to here. Because there's three in the same chemical environment, that's likely what that is. And so what I'm saying is, in my interpretation, that this is next to some strong electron withdrawing group. And the electron withdrawing group that I'm considering is really an oxygen, where this is a methoxy group that also isolates these protons such that they can't have a near neighbor because there's no carbon adjacent to them. So that also turns them into a singlet. And that's how I'm interpreting that. Okay. Let's go and get the next pattern. So I want to zoom in on this one. And what pattern is that? What are we seeing? This is integrating for two different protons. And the question is, what is this pattern? And I'm watching the chat and I'm checking for faces. I'm going to snapshot this one and bring this one in too, because I've got some questions. I've got some questions about what this could be. Okay, that allows us to zoom in pretty good. All right, this is two protons, two H's, in same or similar environment. And my question is this a quartet? Quartets should be 1 to 3 to 3 to 1. Is this looking like 1 to 3 to 3 to 1? It's not. The ratios are off. This is not a quartet. It's something other than a quartet. It looks like 1 to 2 to 3 to 2 or something. It's not right. So we have some options here. One of the options is that that it's two protons that are in the same chemical environment. Another option is that it could be two different protons in similar chemical environments that are overlapping on top of each other, and that they've landed in the same place accidentally. which makes it hard to understand, hard to read. And so as we're reading this, I'm going to just pass over it for a second, zoom out, and zoom into these guys and see if I could tell what these are. Do these look like these make sense? What's the pattern on the left? The one on the left does. The one on the left looks like it makes sense. What about the one on the right? The one on the left is 1-to-1. What's the one on the right? 1-to-2-to-1. Okay, so I'm going to screenshot this and bring this in too. Here. Okay. So this one looks like a doublet. It looks like it's 1-to-1. And the other one looks like a 1-to-3, 1-to-2-to-1. And it looks like a triplet. But there's something here that's going on and that these guys, if I could clean them up, look like this. See kind of what I'm drawing here, what I'm getting at? Up top here, there's some small splittings up at the top. The main splitting between these peaks, that's a J3. But those little tiny splittings, those are J4s. Most of the time we ignore the J4s. Sometimes the J4s can be helpful. But what that is that the J4 is called long range splitting. And it's a proton that's farther away and can be useful. But for describing the overall pattern, we describe the pattern based on the J3s, not with the additional J4s, because the pattern is easy to understand in terms of the J3s. So this is a doublet and a triplet, and the triplet is falling at 7.48. So we've got a 7.48 back to our table, all the way back here. 7.48, integration 1, splitting, triplet, number of neighbors 2. And then we've got a 7.75. Integration 1, doublet, number of neighbors 1, the assignments we haven't made yet. And we've got that other proton that we haven't figured out what to do with yet, which is sitting in here at, let's get that number, 6.9, looks like 3-ish. 6.93, integration 2, splitting. It's a multiplet. We don't know what it is. So sometimes when I don't know what it is, I just list it as not knowing what it is. And I list multiplet as a way of saying, I haven't decided yet. There's some uncertainty in my data. Okay, let's check our spectrum because I think there's one more peak that we need to see. So let's zoom out and we'll catch this one peak here. That's a singlet that's all the way out at 10.42. So we've got a 10.42, which is also a singlet. One proton, singlet, zero neighbors. And now we need to decide what some of these things are. Let's start with that 10.42. The 10.42, if we go and we look at the NMR table, the types of protons that come out at 10.4, just in this range over here, are really aldehydes. And that is looking very much like an aldehyde proton. And aldehyde protons generally are singlets because they tend not to have any neighbors next to them, depending upon what group is over here that is the R group. But if we stick this onto an aromatic ring, it's quite possible that that thing is an aldehyde. And so I'm going to estimate that this singlet that is out here, this is an aldehyde. And that's my assignment for it. Okay. Now, didn't we say that we had 4 units of unsaturation, an aromatic ring, a double bond, which could be a carbonyl or a carbon-carbon double bond? We've got to account for 8 carbons altogether. The aromatic ring would be 6. So if I look at what I've accounted for, if I say that this now is made up of an aromatic ring system, an aldehyde, and a methoxy group, and that means that this aromatic ring system must have 2 substituents on it, because both methoxy and aldehyde need to be terminal, then I have accounted for 6, 7, 8. I have accounted for C8. I have accounted for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 hydrogens and 2 oxygens. And that's everything in my formula. Which means that everything that's going on out here, whatever these guys are, they are aromatic protons. And they are the 4 aromatic protons that are in the molecule. What I hope that you're seeing is that this process of reading the spectrum and analyzing it is entirely nonlinear. If you're looking at the way that I'm bouncing around, I'm bouncing back and forth between all kinds of things. I'm bouncing back and forth between the spectrum. I'm bouncing back and forth between my assignments. I'm using the table in order to give assignments. Oh, and let's check. 6.93 to 7.75. 6.93, very close to 7, to 7, almost very close to 8. That branch right there is all aromatic protons. That is the aromatic range. And that's where all those guys are falling. Okay, so how do I now figure out what this is? I think I have all the parts, but I still don't know what my molecule looks like. Notice that I have not even looked at the carbon NMR. We'll look at the carbon NMR in a little bit, but we can do everything that we need to do with these simple ones from the proton NMR, which is really kind of cool. We don't even need carbon to do it. More complicated molecules, carbon is great, but here it would be good to look at too. But right now, I want to stay focused on this. What I want to do is take these parts and put the parts together in all the different ways that I can. So let's assume that I have an aromatic molecule that has an aldehyde and a methoxy. There are 3 different ways that I could put the aldehyde and the methoxy onto the aromatic ring system. And with those three different ways, they are ortho, meta, and para. With ortho, meta, and para, excuse me, now what I need to do is I need to figure out what these patterns are going to look like. So I need to be able to predict what all these protons are going to look like in order to be able to match with the spectrum. Fortunately, these three different types of disubstituted aromatic ring systems have a very common pattern that is easily recognizable most of the time. When I go through and look at each one of these protons, I'm going to get a singlet for the aldehyde, a singlet for the methyl, and that is going to be true of all of these. The aldehyde and the methyl will all be singlets. The question is about the other protons. So let's take the ortho one and talk about this first proton. How many neighbors does that first proton have? How many neighbors that are J3 neighbors? Just the one. And so with one neighbor, what do we predict this would be split into? Doublet, triplet, singlet, quartet. What do we expect? A doublet. Good. Okay. What about this guy down here? What would that one be split into? How many neighbors does it have? What is the coupling that we expect? Not in terms of the value of the coupling constant, but just is it a singlet, doublet, triplet, quartet? What do we expect here? For this guy. Doublet. Okay, now it gets more complicated. This proton has two different neighbors. Those two different neighbors could be different in their J values or could be the same in their J values. So we allow for both possibilities. If the J value is the same and I have two neighbors with the same J value, what sort of splitting pattern do I expect? Two neighbors, same J value, N plus one rule. Be a triplet. So I expect a triplet. What if the J value is different? If the J value is different, I get split into a doublet and then a doublet again. And that's where I get a double doublet. So this is a triplet or double doublet. And the proton, which is just above, is similar, triplet, or it could possibly be a double doublet. Those are the patterns that we would expect. Now, let's do the next molecule. What about this first proton here? Singlet, doublet, triplet, quartet, what do I expect? Top of the molecule here. What you need to key into is you need to key into the fact that it's got one neighbor. So it's a doublet. Okay, let's key into this one. This one likewise has one neighbor. Has one neighbor, this one is also going to be a doublet. Now, this guy has two neighbors. And as two neighbors, it could be a triplet if the J values were the same. But if the J values are different, it could be a double doublet. Now tell me about this one. How many neighbors does this one have? that are J3s? Zero. So what is this one going to be? Singlet. This is key. This allows you to be able to distinguish very quickly this one from this one, because it's the only one that has a singlet. So what we wind up getting is we wind up getting a pattern that is a smaller pattern. We wind up getting a pattern that is oftentimes two triplets that are fairly close together. And then we get a doublet, maybe more downfield, and another doublet more downfield. We wind up getting something like that. In this one that is meta, we usually wind up getting a singlet fairly far downfield. And then the triplets and the doublets are usually pretty close together in terms of where they're located. And their integrations are all 1:1:1:1. 1:1:1:1 because of the types of protons that they are. Now, this one is not fair. The para one, I have to tell you about, because the para one is non-first order. Which means it doesn't follow the rules. It's called an A prime B prime system. And it gets labeled out this way: A prime B prime. And it's due to a plane of symmetry that runs down the molecule that this happens. Symmetry oftentimes produces this A prime B prime system in a fixed orientation molecule, like an aromatic ring system. And the A prime B prime systems have a very characteristic look to them. They look like an inverted quartet, two inverted quartets, and they look very symmetrical. So what you see is a high outside, small inside, and you see it mirrored. So you get two of these. It looks like a double quartet. And this is the A prime B prime system. And everybody says, why? Why does it look that way? And I can't tell you, because it's non-first order. It is relativistic effects between the spin states that cannot be predicted by the first order splitting pattern rules. And you just have to see it, recognize it, and memorize it. But the great thing is that all para-substituted aromatic ring systems that are di-substituted all have this pattern. And as soon as you see it, it's like, boom, oh, that's A prime B prime, I'm on it. I know exactly what to do. So now what we need to do is we need to go back and rule in or rule out different systems. So we go back to our spectra. And maybe what we do is we actually go all the way back to Webb spectra. We zoom out and we look just at the aromatic range. We look just at the 6.8 to 7.8 range. So let's do that. I need to get to the keyboard. 7.9. And then let's zoom in on that. In fact, let's screenshot that ticket. And that will allow me to bring that up here. And then I can zoom out and we can see which one of these it matches. So what I've got is I've got a doublet and a triplet. And then I got this thing. What I don't seem to have are these inverted quartets. The inverted quartets do not appear. And if I had the inverted quartets, the inverted quartets would be for all four protons and they would integrate two and two. And I don't have that. So it's not that one. Now the question is there a singlet? Look in here and see, I've got a doublet, I've got a triplet, and I've got this thing that's integrating for two. So there's two protons that are in this, but is there a singlet in this? Is that sort of reasonable to assume that maybe I have a triplet and a doublet? And well, what would I have to have? I have a triplet and I have a doublet. So triplet and a doublet. I would have to get a doublet and a singlet. A doublet and a singlet would be three peaks. And this is giving me four. There is no singlet. Which means that this pattern, the pattern of doublet, doublet, triplet, triplet, doublet, triplet, and this is probably a doublet plus a triplet overlapping on top of each other. And if I really wanted to find it, I could probably find it. I would probably say that if I took the triplet here, that was this pattern, and I take those values and I line them up and see which one they line up best on. Oh, they kind of line up best on this one, I think. And so what it's looking to me like is it's looking to me like there is a triplet, which is in there. And then there is a doublet, which are these two that are stacked on top of it. And together, those are adding together to give me this pattern. I missed that. These guys add there, which is giving me this pattern that is one, two, two, and then I'm adding up a one and a two, which is giving me a three. So I'm getting a one to two to three, and then back to a two. And that's the pattern that's arising out of this. So this is one to two to three to two. And that's the pattern that I'm seeing that's coming out of this thing. And so it's stacking the two patterns on top of each other. And they just happen to fall. And so by process of elimination, I would say that that's my molecule. And that one fits the best. Now, some things that I did. I did a non-linear process. I went through and I looked at the spectrum. And after looking at the spectrum, I went through and I figured out my units of unsaturation. After figuring out my units of unsaturation, that gave me some things to look for, some things, some possibilities to consider. I then constructed my table and I had some uncertainty in my table, not knowing what was going on, but I filled in all of my table that I could, and I filled in assignments where I could. And even the things that I didn't know what they were, at least I knew that they were aromatic and that I would then move on and not get stuck. So sometimes you don't always know what everything is and you still move forward. I take the pieces and make sure I have all the pieces. Once I have all the pieces, I construct the different possibilities. After constructing the different possibilities, I analyze the possibilities to figure out what they should look like in the spectrum. After doing that, each of the possibilities should be distinguishable from each other by some means. So my distinguishing marks are looking for the A prime, B, B prime system, looking for the singlet, and then not finding those things, I fall into the last category. And then I rationalize and make sense out of that to make sure that it's actually working. And after doing all of that, I've got one answer, which is the only possible answer. I propose that answer, and then I go and check the solution and see if I've done it right. There it is. Now, what does the carbon NMR look like? And what could we have gained out of the carbon NMR? I didn't want to complicate things with carbon NMR just yet. Carbon NMR is less interesting. It doesn't have the splittings. It's decoupled. And so while protons do split carbons, they almost always give you the decoupled spectrum. That takes a bit to explain how they decouple it. Basically, what they do is they pulse two different pulse sequences. They pulse a sequence that saturates the hydrogens, takes the hydrogens, and kicks the hydrogens all into their excited states. When the hydrogens are all in their excited states, you remove the lower ground state spin state. And so you remove the possibility of having excited and ground state, and it coalesces into a single line. Spin decoupling. We just saturate them and kick them all into their excited states. And we pulse it fast enough that they can't relax. So they all get kicked up into their excited states. That means that what we see here is we see single lines. And then in addition to seeing single lines, they are not integratable. So I can't tell which of these is, how many carbons are giving rise to each signal. And then I also have to recognize areas where there is solvent, like that peak, and then the actual signal peaks that we're getting in here. So this is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H. And in terms of my molecule, A, usually alkyl groups fall down here. So I'd have to get you a good carbon table to look at, but alkyl groups usually fall here. When they're shifted this far downfield, that means that the alkyl group is on an electron withdrawing group. That guy is A. The farthest downfield is the one that is on the strongest electron withdrawing group. That's the carbonyl. H is this guy. And then F, this guy down here, is one of these two. And I can't tell you which one it is, but G and F, G is probably, actually I can tell you, those are probably G and F. How do I know that? G is shorter, it has no hydrogens on it, it's quaternary. F is shorter, has no hydrogens on it, it's quaternary. And G has the stronger electron withdrawing group attached as opposed to F, which has a lesser electron withdrawing group. And then E, D, C, and B, I don't know where they are, but they are the other E, D, C, and B. No, don't erase all of that. These three guys here are E, D, C, and B, and it would take a lot more energy than I have to try to sort out which of those is which on that part of the ring system. Because in a ring system like this, it is not linear in terms of which groups are next to the strongest electron withdrawing groups. In a ring system like this, on an aromatic ring, there are all kinds of ring currents and things that happen across the ring and in the metaposition and the ortho positions, and things get knocked out of whack of what you would think they are. But most of the time, we don't need to sort that out anyway. And we have accounted for all of the carbons. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And the aldehyde, that was extremely helpful in verifying that there was an aldehyde, because that carbon down close to 200, and aldehyde is the only thing that shows up down there. And the methoxy was also really helpful. And then everything else that is in this range, those are all the aromatic carbons. So the carbon NMR is not always as helpful as the proton NMR. The proton NMR is sometimes a lot more helpful. But hopefully this gave you a good sort of overview of how we attack a problem. And we're going to do a lot more of these. So I wind up doing more in class probably than I should, simply because I try to give you as much. I pick problems that are going to show you things that I want you to learn. So I'm constantly looking for problems that are just slightly outside of normal to give you some things to learn from, so that when you hit those complications, you've at least seen those complications before. I think that's all I want to do today. This has been kind of a lot. How are you guys doing? It's going to be rough for a little bit. It's not something that's not like you're just going to go out and you're just going to do it. I'm not just going to turn you loose and say, hey, go do, you know, all of these. Here's a quiz. Now figure it out. We've got lots more practice that we're going to do together. And you have lots of practice you're going to have to do on your own as well. So I highly, highly recommend starting with this website. The reason that I like Web Spectra is the problems are split up into beginning, intermediate, and advanced. And sticking within the beginning problems is pretty helpful. There is another website that is, also linked off the additional resources. It's called Organic Structure Elucidation. The spectra in these are better. So if I show you the spectrum, the spectra are higher quality and they give you the integrations. And the splitting patterns are easier to read. You can just see that the line heights, the intensities, are better in this problem than they are in the others. And so as I go, as I go from problem to problem in this one, come on, do the problems. Or reload, do the problems, there we go. Let's go to another easy one. The greens are easy, oranges are moderate. But you can see the splitting patterns are a little bit crisper in this because they're using a 500 megahertz NMR. The other website was using probably a 90 megahertz or a 250. And so by going to the 500 megahertz NMR, we've got much better spectrum. The problem with this website is they don't have the answer key available. A lot of instructors use this as a test website, and you can't get the answers unless you write to the author of the website and send in academic credentials, and then they send you and tell you where the answer key is. So I don't, I think that these are great problems. And if people want to work these problems, then I will check your answers and help you with the answers with these. But I think the other website is an easier website to navigate for right now. What I'll tell you though, is that when I give you spectrum on a test, I'm gonna give you a spectrum that looks like this, that is going to be easier to read and to tell the splitting patterns. And I'm going to give you the integration values so that you don't have to just use the line bars. That makes it, I just try to take some of the steps out of it for you to make it a little bit easier. But I do work from realistic spectrum. I tend not to like fake spectrum that just make it easier. I like to work with the complexities of real spectrum because that's what we need to be able to do. We need to be able to actually use the skill set and read real spectrum. So, and these two websites do that. These two websites are really good for that. There are some practice problems in your book. Those are not bad to start with. There are practice problems in Pavia. Those are also good. And then the Web Spectra website is what I would really recommend, because it's got way more problems. And with this, you know, this is like, you gotta think of this like Sudoku or crossword puzzles. It's just something that you gotta do just a ton of. You just gotta sit down and do them. And you're looking for something to do, and you want something to do before bed, pick an NMR problem and go do an NMR problem. I kid you not. This is, I mean, the people who get good at this, who are successful at this, are the people that will do 40, 50, 60 of these problems and just, and go back and redo them again after you've done a whole bunch. There's nothing wrong with redoing a problem and working through them. So that's my pitch. Got to practice it. Okay. And we'll do lots more together. So there's lots more to come. All right, I'm done. I'm gonna let you go. I've been talking long enough. I've been standing long enough. I'm gonna go get off my feet. And I'll take any questions that you guys have. But I think I'm gonna stop the recording at this point.